music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
And good Wednesday morning, and welcome to Intravenous here on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting on the unceded ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I will be your host for the hour. I'm Robin, and I have an exciting show today. Quite honestly, I'm not exactly sure what will happen, but a couple of cartoonists contacted me last week, and I'm going to be talking to them about how women are really making waves in the comic industry and in the writing of graphic novels and putting this material together with voices that we don't often hear from or hear about that are written in this fashion. So it should be, like I said, quite informative and also exciting. While we wait for one of my guests to find the station here in the bowels of the sub-building, we're going to listen to a song. This is from a band called One Far Sun, and quite honestly, I don't know a whole lot about them. They had sent me this in a press kit, and I listened, and I thought that it was really quality stuff. So I'm going to share it with you. It is called People in the Middle, here to start us off.
For the people in the middle.
They're called One Far Sun, and that was a track called People in the Middle to start us off on Intravenous this morning. Welcome to the program. I'm Robin, and in studio today, I'm joined by two guests that I'm very excited for us to get to know. And we're all going to get to know each other equally because this is our first meeting, and the interview came together quite spontaneously and on quite short notice. So it's going to be a little bit of an ad hoc conversation, but that's great. As I mentioned in the intro, I have two local cartoonists here with me. Ivana Filipovic and Miriam Libicki. Oh my goodness. Can't see for a look in here at my notes. And maybe I'll just get the two of you to say hi and introduce yourselves to our listeners in the ways that you would like them to know you.
Hi, my name is Ivana Filipovic, and I'm a female cartoonist originally from Serbia. I've been living here for almost 25 years, actually in April. It will be 25 years, so it's a lifetime. When I first came here, I had huge hopes of making it as a cartoonist. And then I realized, oh, it wasn't going to be that easy. So I actually left cartooning and illustration, and I started working in other jobs, and finally made my way to SFU. And I've had an amazing career here, starting from a web designer to manager, director, and now an analyst. So I'm still here, which is crazy.
And back to illustration and cartooning.
Yes, since about 2017.
Okay.
I'm Miriam Libicki. Thank you very much for having me here. I'm also an immigrant to here. I'm originally from the States, and I've also been here since around the turn of the last century. I originally came here to go to Emily Carr, and that is also where I started drawing comics, although there wasn't any sort of comics classes there yet. So I started drawing comics a little bit illicitly at Emily Carr doing my painting degree. And I've lived here ever since and have been self-publishing comics since 2005. I do a lot of autobiographical works and a lot of stuff about Jewish identity is something that I explore. And I've been, for the last 8 years or so, I've been teaching at Emily Carr, that now there is an illustration department and a bit more comics content. So I've been privileged to teach some newer cartoonists for the last few years, and I draw pretty slow, but I've just been slowly and steadily putting out comics as well all that time.
Cool. I don't think that we've had any female comic drawers, illustrators on the program in my time, so it feels special to me. You know, I think when we think about the industry of comic writing and comic illustration, that's not the picture of who's behind the pencil or the pens or the paints behind the scenes. What drew you to the medium, I guess? You know, what is it about the comic or the graphic novel that really is the juice?
For me, I think it was this really inexpensive opportunity to make your own stories, visual stories. So visual storytelling is something that I am I really love. Of course, I read a lot of comics as a kid, starting with junky, you know, floppy ones, and then graduating to graphic novels. And I find that there are so many interesting and fulfilling stories, especially in so-called literary comics. Because, of course, when you talk about comics, that's such a huge area. There are all kinds of comics. There are commercial comics. Alternative comics, you name it. Similarly to literature, for example, such a wide variety of expressions. For me, it was really about the ability to tell short stories in multiple ways. So that's what I have been exploring throughout my career.
Yeah, I did grow up reading superhero comics, and also, like, you know, Mad Magazine and Humor Comics. They meant a lot to me as a little kid. I feel like I kind of learned to read on comics, and it was something that I shared with my siblings, and we would kind of write fanfic of our Marvel heroes that we didn't know the term fanfic at the time. But I was into them from a little kid, and I think that I was always into art, and I was into painting, but I liked the sensibility of comics because I felt like it was just a much more immediate communication tool. Painting seemed kind of remote. It seemed kind of something that happened in the past centuries. It was very Catholic, the history of Western painting, which was something that, you know, as a Jewish kid, I was like, okay, that's not really me. And that comics being, you know, more humorous, more wordy, more sort of in your head was a kind of art form that I really related to. But like Ivana, I got eventually into the more literary comics. Like at a certain point, I couldn't take superhero comics anymore and they were just too dumb. And then I was out of comics for a while, for several years. And then I kind of discovered the more literary comics and the more self-expressive comics. And that's the first time that I really thought I could draw comics. When I started at Emily Carr, there was a book in the library that I got out because it featured Art Spiegelman. And I was, Art Spiegelman, the creator of Mouse, was very important to me. And I was very interested in him. So I was going to write like a paper on him in my art school. And in the same book, though, collected, was also Phoebe Gleckner, which is, and I had never heard of her as a cartoonist before. They adapted one of her books into a movie, Diary of a Teenage Girl. And that, I mean, it wasn't a movie yet, but that's where listeners might know the name. I think that she had a really raw autobiographical comic that was still semi-fictionalized, but it was about basically a relationship that she was in as a teenager that was, grooming by a pedophile. And it was just like, I was really inspired by how personal it got, but as well that it had so much craft behind it. It wasn't just pure, like, art therapy. And I think that's when I first thought maybe comics is something for me. And like the autobiographical is kind of one of the main genres I've been working in.
Okay. This is all such an education for me. Because I didn't read a lot of comics as a kid, and probably as an adult haven't read a lot of comics. I had no idea that there was such a splitting of the genres through the comic medium.
Yeah, in North America, superhero comics, like until this current century, superhero comics really dominated what comics were in most people's imagination. But in, you know, places like Asia and in Europe, where Ivana is from, I think that there's been an understanding for a longer time that so many different kind of stories can be told in comics.
Absolutely. I grew up reading Hugo Pratt and Corto Maltese. Those books are considered the first literary comics. ever. And that's what really kind of like opened my eyes to different ways of telling a story. For example, Hugo Pratt would mix history and fiction, and in a, such an intelligent way that I felt it was really on par with the best literature out there. And I was a voracious reader as a kid, so I read everything. One of my favorite things was just to read stuff that was at home. And back then, people used to buy books by meter, kind of like a meter of Tolstoy, a meter of, I don't know, Chekhov, or meter of some French writers. So as a little kid, as soon as I learned how to read, I just basically switched to, you know, literature. Because that was the stuff that was always on the shelves. And I didn't understand much of it, but still read through. So it was kind of like, at first, comics were just entertainment. So I was reading comics, like I mentioned, some pulpy stuff coming from Italy, for example. Most of your listeners would not be familiar with that, but those are very popular in Europe, especially in former Yugoslavian Republic still, which is amazing to me that they're still running them. I think some of those are actually only running based on the audience they have in former Yugoslavia. But, you know, just like Miriam, I quickly realized, okay, well, that's just, you know, must be something else there. So, and of course, a huge door opened up, and this incredible world of comics, which is international, more and more, has opened up. And now that I'm in North America, I'm so happy to be able to read comics that come from Korea, for example, which is one of the centers of cartooning today, with some really incredible artists and exciting stories to tell.
The ability, I guess, for you to tell these autobiographical stories, as you mentioned, Miriam, and really craft them in a way that you're reading, but you're also seeing how the emotion kind of plays itself out, right? You get a two-part art, you know, with the words, but also with the pictures. Where and how does that? I don't even know the words that I'm trying to put together here.
Right. Well, I think one of the things that first appealed to me was I was kind of telling a story that happened, like, you know, abroad. I was telling a story that happened somewhere else, and it kind of what I wanted to explain was, you know, this the atmosphere. And I think that, like, writing description can be really tricky for authors and sometimes for readers also. Like, it's hard to write description without making it boring with, you know. And so that's, I think, one great advantage we have as comics artists is you can really set a scene. Like, you can really make somebody immersed in an atmosphere, and it doesn't take a huge budget like a movie. you just do it all yourself. You draw, you know, the sets, as it were, and you can immerse people, and then the look of the place can really influence, you know, how the reader understands the action. And the same with character description. Like, that's kind of tricky to do in prose. Like, obviously you have to do it, and different authors have different wonderful ways of doing it. But as a cartoonist, you have the character description in front of the reader all the time. And so they can always see, you know, how the person is looking and how their particular face reacts to it. So in that way, you know, it is kind of like cinematic, but we have, you know, we have more freedom than people making movies, because it's all you. It's all, you know, one creator, one creative team. And also then we have also the element of the fantastical, which, you know, is something that we can play with in comics that is much harder to do in film. Ivana's recent book, Where Have You Been?, which is a crime relationship story, has a very, very strong sense of place. Like it's set in the Richmond night market. And so I feel like that's a story that really is best told in comics because, you know, it's just this surrealism of that, you know, the Richmond night market surrounding these lovelorn gangsters who are coming together and falling apart and shooting each other.
Yep, and the River Rock Casino.
Right, yes.
So, yeah, it was important for me. That's the story. Actually, it's What's Fear Got to Do with It?
Oh, sorry.
No. That's
it.
I have
you
two
been
very similarly named books.
Right.
So the blue one you have in front of you, What's Fear Got to Do with It, is the one that's set in Richmond and Vancouver. It started actually a long time ago as a project that I wanted to have as my first graphic novel back home, but unfortunately I had to abandon it. And then once I got some interest from a publisher here, which is Conundrum Press, Andy Brown is a publisher who always looks for talent that's making literary comics. So we got connected through a friend of mine and his, and he read my collection of short comics and suggested that I expand one of the short comics, which is not so short, it's 30 pages, into a full-size graphic novel. And then when I signed the contract, I actually started to panic. I'm not interested in this story at all anymore. I mean, I started doing this over 20 years ago. And back then it was set in the Belgrade clubbing scene. And I was thinking, you know, who is ever going to be interested in this nowadays? I mean, not that Belgrade is not a clubbing city anymore. It's still considered one of the Europe's capitals of partying and clubbing. But I just didn't feel any connection to it anymore. So it's a long time for something like that. So I started thinking, so what would make it interesting for me? And I'm a foodie, and I love going to Richmond Night Market. And I said to myself, I have all these photos I took. I have a library of reference photos. I love the feel of it. I love the crowds, and you can hide all kinds of things in it. And I also started looking into more into this interesting relationship of three people in a relationship, which I don't think is often portrayed in comics or any other medium. So there is a three-way relationship in this small graphic novel that's from my point of view very interesting, because we have one person who is really in love and the other one who wants to get out, but we don't know that at the beginning. That was also something I wanted to portray, is basically a bunch of people who all have their really faults, big things that are actually, you would say that none of them is a hero character. You don't have a hero character in this graphic novel. They all have their humanities on display. They all have their good and bad sides. And once you read it through, I'm not sure if you will have a favorite character. I know the hero concept is the one that people use in novels, in literature, and in any other kind of expression. Like filmmaking is also based often on the hero concept, but I wanted to show characters that would not be kind of like taken as heroes after reading, for sure.
Yeah, I think that sort of ambivalence and ambiguity is something that comics are really good at. And again, like, if you just think about comic strips, you think about superheroes, you might not think that. But I feel like because of the combination of words and pictures, and then also be the, you know, the transitions between pictures, that you can be looking at, you know, two panels at once, you can be looking at a whole page at once. It's really good to have, you know, it's a really good place to show contradictions, and to show, like, that you can, you know, there is a difference between showing and telling in a comic, and you can tell one thing while showing another thing.
Totally. And what I'm also interested about is what's not said or shown. So I always think that stories happen in the reader's mind. So they are the second party to this, and we have to leave room for them to create their own story out of your actual book. So a lot of times I'm actually editing down what I'm saying, like so much that I leave just little traces here and there so people can make their own connections, can make their own storyline, decide what the storyline is. Sometimes that can be confusing, and it's not how many other people work, but I feel that if you leave people room to apply their own intelligence, they'll be more grateful. And that's what I hear usually when people read my work, that's basically how they feel about it. But they also unsure, so sometimes I get questions like, what actually happened here?
and that's you say, okay. You decide.
Yeah, that's right. I always say, you decide. And that's actually, I think it's even written at the end of the book, and not very many people turn that last page where it says, it's your story. It's not mine anymore. And I know Miriam actually has an approach that's kind of like more documentary, your essays. I fell in love with your essays when I first started reading your comics, Miriam. It was that a story, who gets to be an unfit mother.
Right, who gets called an unfit.
Called an unfit mother. That was so impressive. I think we should hear a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Right. So I'm really interested in the intersection of comics and nonfiction. And there are different genres of nonfiction, right? So one of my first influences when I started making comics was Joe Sacco, who does comics from sort of a journalism perspective, that he's a trained journalist, but also a really good artist. So he wrote books from different, like, sort of conflicts around the world, and Palestine is one of his most famous ones. It's going to be reissued soon. And that was a big influence on me. And so I was really impressed how he could do really immersive and really subjective, really personal journalism in comics form. And so I was like, okay, so there's autobiography in comics, or autobio, as we call it. And then there's journalism in comics. And so what other genres of nonfiction could really work as comics? And so I started doing graphic essays. So basically, that's it can have, like a personal essay, it can have personal and narrative elements, but it's really about exploring a theme rather than going through a narrative from beginning to end. So exploring a theme, exploring a topic or a question. And so that's kind of one thing that I've been working on. And, you know, in the last 15, 20 years since I started doing these, you know, short pieces that I called graphic essays has actually become an established genre. Many people, there's a movement called graphic medicine, where people talk about, you know, medical experiences they've had, like, you know, their journey with a cancer diagnosis or with some other medical condition, or they're, you know, sometimes they're as a health professional, and they explore these things through comics, and that's become a really powerful whole movement in comics as well. But yeah, so the one essay that Ivana talks about is one that I published in 2019, and it was about when my family got investigated by Child Services here in Vancouver. Basically, I live in a townhouse complex, and some people saw my kids, saw my kids playing outside and said, you know, these children are unsupervised, and put in a call to Child Services. And then, it was, you know, a whole investigation, And it came out all right, spoiler alert, but it just made me realize, you know, how vulnerable we are, how vulnerable families are. And it happened to take place at the time, same time that in the U.S. they were separating families at the border. They were making like these camps for immigrants and separating children from parents. And so I was thinking about, you know, other families who are even much more vulnerable than my family. So it kind of starts out with the incident that happened to me, but I use it to discuss, you know, sort of how governments take a sort of carceral or punitive approach to child welfare. So that was an essay that was published on the NIB, and that one was nominated for an Eisner Award, which are the biggest awards in comics. So got a short story Eisner nomination, and that was really amazing because also it made some of my friends kind of come out to me and say, like, you know, this happened to my family or that happened to my family. And I think that there's such an idea of shame, you know, as a parent to feel that you're being judged as a parent and, you know, not just judged with somebody's looking at you wrong, but judged like your children could be taken away. And so I think that if that happens to you, there is like automatically this huge sense of shame. And that's why it can be so powerful to illustrate it and to discuss it publicly. And like the response I got from that short essay was really incredible and really rewarding.
Yeah, and it's beautifully drawn, and it's a watercolor,
right.
Full color, really gentle drawings which contrast the situation that's really hard and heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know Miriam's family now. I can guarantee you those kids are happy and very creative. And if this can happen to Miriam, you know, it can happen to all of us, right? Right.
Yeah. I'm going to take a pause here so we can listen to a piece of music and come back and talk a little bit more with my guests, who are Ivana Filipovic and Miriam Libitsky, two female comics from the city. And I think we're going to come back and jump a little bit more into the ideas of, you know, how, as you were mentioning, Miriam, comics can really take us into these stories where like any good literature, right, where the personal becomes the universal.
Yes.
I guess, you know, with the question of how are we, the euphemistic we, how are you as comic writers and illustrators, you know, really able to bring voices that we haven't heard and that we don't often get to hear those kinds of stories through through literature or through comics. But I'll have you introduce the song that you brought, Ivana. I've never heard of this band, and so tell us what we're going to hear and what you like.
Are you going to play the Wet Leg song?
I am, yes.
Okay, great. Miriam, you're familiar with the band?
Yes.
Yeah. I find it interesting because when I first heard the song, I thought it was like two girls in a bedroom like doing a song together. They're not actually girls, they're experienced musicians, but the song is so simple. And I think it also applies to university students, so it's a good combo.
Okay, great. Well, as I said, I've never heard them, so I'm excited to have a listen. Wet Leg with Chaise Lounge on Intravenous.
time to worry your mother. Excuse me.
What?
Excuse me.
What?
Hey, you, in the front row, are you coming backstage after the show? Because I've got a dress long in my dressing room and a pack of warm beer that we can consume.
And welcome back to Intravenous here on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I am Robin, your host, and been talking with the cartoonists and graphic novel creators, comic book writers. What do
I yeah, I think we do say creators, you know, if you're somebody who does both. But I embrace the term cartoonists also. I totally see myself in the tradition of cartooning.
Yeah. Why not?
It feels fun cartooning.
Yeah.
You know, there's an element of fun to the sort of moniker. During the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, as in all art forms, women are at the back of the bus, if they even get on the bus, and how that is starting to shift.
Yes.
A little bit, a lot,
step
a marginal
step.
Amount. but that the last few years maybe have seen some unprecedented activity in terms of the recognition of female comics cartoonists and how that is potentially then changing the entire narrative of, you know, what's possible for not only women in the industry but also the different voices and the different stories that we're allowed to hear through that storytelling.
There's definitely more attention, and I think last year, 2023, was a really significant year for female cartoonists in BC, especially because we got really celebrated. I don't think people are aware of the fact that we have some of the world's biggest awards here in BC. Miriam herself got an Inkpot in San Diego, which is an award that she shares with some really famous people.
Right. I think that the name Inkpot Award is not that much known outside the comics industry, but if you look on the Wikipedia entry for Inkpot Award and the names of people who have won over the decades, it's a huge, huge honor. Like, it's kind of a career award for people who have really made changes, you know, who have changed the face of the comics industry or the, you know, comics derived industries. And in my case, they said it was about drawn essays, like kind of that putting that format. Like, I don't claim to be the first person to ever do a graphic essay, but I think that it was a recognition that you know, working in that genre has been influential.
Absolutely, yeah. And, of course, the National Reading Program in Germany picked up her latest work, which is a collaborative work. Miriam, do you want to tell us a little bit about But I Live book?
Sure. So it's a project that is actually ongoing, and maybe I'll talk about how it's ongoing in a bit, but it's spearheaded by Charlotte Chalier, who is the head of the German and Slavic Studies Department at University of Victoria. And so she was... she is a German scholar and a Holocaust scholar, and so it was her discovering Art Spiegelman's Mouse and seeing that it was such a powerful way to teach a really difficult subject. Like, she saw that when she taught Mouse in her university courses, students were connecting with it just emotionally so much more and really understanding it. And so her idea was to pair Holocaust survivors who are still alive, which there are not many Holocaust survivors who are still alive, with graphic novelists to make these collaborative graphic novels about their experience. And so I was recruited to the project. She found me through Google, which is a story I always like to repeat because I think it's great that she Googled Jewish graphic novelist Vancouver. And I guess I'm known for tackling Jewish topics. And I came up and she contacted me for that. And I'm really grateful she did because it's been one of the most meaningful things that I've been involved with. So I was paired with a survivor who also lives here in the Vancouver area, David Schaefer, originally from Romania. And it was really rewarding because I think that more and more, I mean, people are discovering that comics are a really powerful tool for, like, memoir and nonfiction. Like, George Takei recently collaborated on a memoir about his time in a U.S. Japanese internment camp and such like that. But I think that the process can get very dry in a way that doesn't explore comics' full potential when you have, you know, A, the subject, B, then there's a writer, and then they pass that on, they pass that on to a cartoonist, and they're just, it's kind of an assembly line. And so the way that Charlotte had this vision for it was very much not that. So we worked with historians to get this really rigorously well-researched. I had a research assistant, which was amazing to work with, but it was really an organic process between David and me. Like, I conducted the interviews with him, I would, you know, show him all my thumbnails, and then we would have phone conversations about what he thought and what he felt was accurate and not. And so it was a real creative process between the two of us, and I think it shows in the graphic novel. Like, it's really is a living thing, and not like a quote-unquote adaptation. And so there's three stories in the volume, But I Live. There's my story with David, and there's Gilad Seliktar, who worked with two brothers in the Netherlands, and Barbara Eileen, who worked with Emmy Arbel, a survivor of Ravensbrück. And it's we all took very different graphic approaches, but we were also kind of collaborating with each other. We were drawing this book during the lockdown, and so we had... like Zoom meetings, you know, every few weeks where we would share our process with each other as well. So we actually influenced and collaborated with each other, which, you know, counterintuitively came out with our stories all looking very, very different because we kind of saw, like, if you're going in that lane, I'm going to go in this lane. And so, yeah, I'm very proud of this book. It's it won a couple of prose awards for academic publishing and other Canadian literary awards. And then, as Ivana said, there's a reading program in Germany where they distribute, like, special copies of books that are just basically distributed through the whole country. And this book was chosen, the German edition of the book was chosen for that. So there's, you know, it's sold, like, tens of thousands of copies in Germany.
And it's all in all the schools, from what I understand, yeah.
Right. And so this project is continuing. Like, Dr. Chalier got a Shirk grant for it. And then with the success of this book, she was able to get another bigger Shirk grant. So it's expanding to more survivors of genocides and atrocities. So there is a team working on, like, Indian residential schools in Canada. So the historians are all Indigenous. The artists are all Indigenous. And the survivors, obviously, are Indigenous. And that's a whole... cluster of this project happening, as well as Syrian survivors, Iraqi survivors, continuing to work with Holocaust survivors as well. So I'm involved in the second phase, and I'm working with a survivor in Toronto, and other. I'm forgetting some, but it's really expanded, and I think it's really a powerful project because it kind of shows how it can be done. Like taking these subjects that are so heavy, and also can be really exploitive when outsiders write about them. And doing this process that is rigorously researched, but also really empowers the survivors because they're active collaborators with the artist. Like they end up being a creator as well.
Yeah, and it was, I think I heard you say that it was really important for them to see drawings and to start thinking visually, and then more memories would come back.
Yes, so that was definitely
a part of the process. Mm.
That was something that wasn't quite anticipated, but it definitely happened during the process, is that when I would submit my thumbnails to David, we would have conversations and he would remember more things, and he would describe more things. And he already has a really incredible memory, and he is a really great storyteller, so it was very easy to work with him. But through the process, yeah, he was having more memories, and he was also kind of getting emotional in ways that he said that, you know, he hadn't felt in a while, because, you know, these were his memories, so he remembered them happening to him. But when he sees the drawings and he sees that he was a small child, like he sees these things happening to a small child, how I depict him in the drawings, like it really was poignant for him. He's like, you know, I don't know how I survived that. Now, you know, seeing what a small kid I was when that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these stories are definitely tough to read. And then we have another local creator, Emily Carrington, who also tackled a harrowing story. She was sexually abused as a child. So she created a graphic novel, and I think that was her first graphic novel, which is published by Dronin Quarterly from Montreal. And it won the Land Prize, which is one of the highest awards people can receive in North America for graphic novels. That is a book that I recommend to everyone to read.
Yeah, it's called Our Little Secret.
Our Little Secret.
And I think that book is super interesting because I think it does, you know, as you were saying, telling stories that haven't really been told before and haven't been told from that perspective. And I think that stories of childhood trauma have been told, but the way she goes into it is so deep, but also it kind of turns into a story of her seeking justice. So I feel like it isn't really a classic hero's journey in the way that we think of these kind of memoirs. Is like, you know, this terrible thing happened to me and then I prevailed and, you know, here's how I'm all good now. But it was when she came to terms with it and when she actually tried to seek justice, and that whole ordeal ends up being a big part of the book, which I think is very powerful and different.
Absolutely. And then let's mention Pia Guerra as well. She's a cartoonist and editorial cartoonist, which is slightly different. So these are usually political cartoons or commentary that happen in just one panel. And she's been living in Vancouver for a while now with her partner in crime, Ian Butby, who I think they co-write some of their...
Yeah, they write New Yorker cartoons together.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Pia was listed last year for a Pulitzer Prize. The Pulitzer Cartooning Prize has expanded to be more inclusive of other visual expressions, and recently had a few females nominated and winning as well. And she was basically shortlisted last year. It just shows how important her work is. You don't get to be on the shortlist for Pulitzer for nothing. I encourage people to look up all of these authors and find them on social media or find the books anywhere where books are sold or in libraries. They're everywhere available to just read something different and very strong in terms of expression.
Yeah, maybe because I'll post the audio for this program up in our archive on our website. And in the show description, if you can send me those authors' names, then I can list them and maybe even hot link them so that they can get directly to the page and find out about these
For sure.
these books and read some of these fantastic books that you've brought to our attention and the authors that created them. I'm always surprised at how the hour just, you know, vaporizes even without a plan. And so we've got about 7 minutes left until we're interrupted by Democracy Now!, which is the program that comes up afterwards. But I want to make sure that, I have everything that you want to talk about talked about. And make sure that people know where to also find your own work and how to find you on the big wide world web.
But I Live was published by University of Toronto Press, so it's available in bookstores. Like it's you might have to special order it from your favorite local bookstore, but it's definitely available. And I have an earlier book published with Fantagraphics called Toward a Hot Jew, which is a collection of my graphic essays. That is out of print now, but I believe you can still get an ebook of that one.
Yeah, my collection of short comics, which was awarded last year, is available through Amazon. And as an author, I kind of had a struggle trying to publish short comics because the publishers would always reject it, saying, well, you know, short comics are not that popular, nobody's going to read that. And it kind of pushed me into self-publishing. And the best platform, apparently, for authors who are not that well known is Amazon. It's actually quite easy to set up and to publish through Amazon. So that's what I did. And then at some point I started kind of like giving the book to people. And one of the things I did is I sent it in for an awards competition. At that point I actually didn't even know that that was Canada's top comic art competition. It's the Doug Wright Awards, and they celebrate comics in a couple of categories. So I sent mine in as a self-published and won. And I remember voting. I was actually not in Canada when they had the ceremony live on YouTube, and I said to my husband, there is no way I'm going to win this, because all other people listed have had long careers and are quite famous, and it's just and then by, you know, some kind of like, I don't know, intervention, all of a sudden my name was on the screen and I was like, what?
So those awards are at the Toronto Comic Arts Festival.
That's right.
Which is maybe one of the biggest, well, not by size, but by reputation, festivals for literary comics in Canada. And you're a special guest there this year, right?
I am. So we are preparing for various panels, for signings, and feels a bit surreal, I have to say. It was also surreal to me to hear that this award was the first award given by the Doug Wright Committee to a West Coast cartoonist. Yeah. I actually couldn't believe it, because I know the level of talent in this province, and that just didn't sit right with me, I have to say. Pun intended. it just seems that we are a bit overlooked. What's your impression, Miriam?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Toronto is obviously such a big center, and then Montreal has its own whole comics industry. And so, yeah, I think that Vancouver, Vancouver comics is a bit taken for granted. I think that we could definitely shine more on the national stage.
And we don't actually have a kind of like a decent-sized publishing house publishing comics in BC. As far as I'm aware, people usually gravitate to Seattle's Fantagraphics, which of course is a really great quality publisher. And then luckily we have Andy Brown, who is originally from Vancouver, so he always considers possibilities from Vancouver or BC as well for Conundrum Press. That's the publishing house that he runs.
So there's hope for the for the West Coast and for the genre to grow and for more women, more underrepresented voices to just be published and also recognized. So I want to thank both of you for coming in today. It's been such an education for me, just in terms of the whole field of illustration and cartooning and graphic noveling, and I'm excited to read the books I was gifted, and dig into these new stories. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for having us, Robin.
You've been listening to Intravenous here on CJSF, Campus Community Radio. And don't go anywhere, because Democracy Now! Is coming up in just not too short a time.